even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The been thinking about McDonald's all day, can't get it off my mind. I can already taste it. Ooh, got my mind on my mouth and my mouth ready for some Mickey D's deal.
There's a deal for every moment at McDonald's.
Right now, get two of your favorites for just $3.50. Mix and match a classic McChicken, a hot and spicy McChicken, or a juicy McDouble. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal. Single item at regular price.
My name is Dave Hanratty, and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 85 of the No Encore Music Podcast. It's a full house this week as we welcome back the Lion of Lisbon, Cullum O'Regan.
Hola.
He's back.
Yay.
We also have Craig Fitzpatrick.
No applause. Okay. Hi, guys.
College's number one student,
Delighted
Craig Fitzpatrick.
Delighted to be here.
Are you a class rep yet?
No, I'm not. Do I look like a class rep?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nah, mate.
Well, that's not all. We welcome back, in from the cold, our roving reporter, David Anthony Tapley.
Woo! Yeah!
Age 26.
Who is the frontman, the leader of Tandem Felix, a great, great band.
The dictator, if you will.
Who are currently enjoying a bit of a... bit of an Indian summer. They're back. Tandem Felix are back, and they are back with some new singles. There's a new album on the way, and of course, most importantly, for the immediate future, there is a gig. On Tuesday, November the 7th?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Upstairs in Whelan's?
Upstairs in Whelan's.
Now, what's the door policy on this gig, or the dress code?
The dress code? There's no tuxedo requirements like Arcade Fire's attempted dress code at their show. And
but you must be in jumpsuits, is that essentially?
No, it's like...
Damn it.
You have to be... you have to wear a super dry hoodie and like those old short shorts that players used to wear... playing hurling back in the 70s.
All of the Knicks, like
the Knicks, yeah. You could see the hip bone almost.
Okay,
that's your crowd.
That's the crowd, you've decided.
Yeah. This is our crowd.
Yes. It's a classic Tandem Felix crowd,
it is.
What can we expect from the gig?
It'll be the first time we've played together as a full act in over a year, so you will be witnessing a lot of eye contact and me turning around to people and saying this is when the song ends because we're painfully underprepared, but we'll see.
Now, on the way over to the studio today, Tapley shared something with me, which I'm going to just say on the podcast, and he might be upset, but here we go. Tapley is not a fan of when people in bands who aren't the singer singing along to the song.
No.
No. As in, like, if they're not mic'd up?
Yes.
No, that's ridiculous. I hate that.
That's a cardinal sin.
So I feel like that's the thing that's become more popular in recent years with the whole...
Mumford & Sons explosion.
Yes, I was going to go folky stuff, but yes, Mumford & Sons are to blame.
I think it's also like the, it's the close your eyes, cast your head back looking up towards the skies and really
really enjoy those really short shorts.
The chorus lines of songs or whatever. That just really...
So if you're listening, any members of Tandem Felix,
watch yourselves.
Stay on your mark.
It's like fake transcendence, isn't it? It's like manufacturing some crap moment.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it looks lame.
But there'll be lots of real moments at that gig, which once again is on Tuesday, November the 7th, mm-hmm. upstairs in Whelan's. We're all going, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah?
Free, is it? Got his bit of promo.
Is there a student's discount for Craig?
Students have to pay more.
Good one.
That comes a couple of days after our next excursion. The next episode of No Encore won't be out on Friday because it won't have been recorded by Friday. What the hell is going on?
Because we're recording on Saturday in Galway, bringing the show on the road. Closing out the National Student Radio Conference in NUIG, so that episode will drop Monday.
I presume. Saturday, November the 4th at 4:30 in NUIG, if you are a student of NUIG or you just fancy scaling the fences. Do they have fences down there?
I don't think they're going to have fences around
barbed
our
wire fences?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I've never been to NUIG.
Sure.
I have once.
Why?
A debate
day out.
Oh yeah, things. You were a master debater.
Yeah, you forget. Yeah, I have a strange background of
nerdy activities back
in the day.
What was the topic that day?
That particular, I have absolutely no recollection off the top of my head. I think it had to do with space weaponry. Actually, if I remember correctly,
yeah, space weaponry.
Yeah,
like who would win the fight between?
No, as in like that this house would allow
and Pinhead from Hellraiser 4.
Nukes in space.
Nukes in space. Putting actual weaponry in space, like, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well.
Yeah. Essentially satellite missiles and stuff. Yeah.
I'm for it.
Okay.
I'm for it as well.
On the subject of gigs, though, and I guess, well, before we get there, we should quickly mention our quiz.
Mention the quiz.
Colm O'Regan is missing out on a staff night out.
I am, yeah.
To do the quiz. Are you really upset about this?
I'm not actually that upset about it. Okay. It's just unfortunate timing,
Thursday, December the 7th. Which is also David Tapley's birthday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Tickets are on sale.
He loves a quiz, though.
I love the quiz.
He's looking to put together a dream team for
the quiz. All his mates from Lucan in, is it?
All the boys in from Lucan. Yeah. I'm foregoing our usual excursion to Superdome, Palmerston, instead going to the Working Man's Club.
Workman's Club in Dublin, Thursday, December the 7th. No Encore quiz.eventbrite.ie. It's a tenner ahead, €35 for a table, maximum of 4 people. As I said before, tickets are moving, tables are being bought. So I would recommend getting in because we have limited space on the evening. And there'll be lots of questions all about 2017 pop culture, mostly music, but also other avenues as well. It's going to be the three of us on stage, rocking the mic, and there'll be prizes, actual prizes, lads.
Yeah, no checking your phones, though.
No fucking checking your phones. I swear to Christ, if we catch you checking your phone, we're going to break fingers.
It'll be on eBay by the end of the night.
Fair enough.
We've an honest crowd, I think we'll be
we
okay.
We do, yeah. We
good people.
They're good.
There's a lot of blow-ins, though, with these things, isn't there, guys?
Yeah. We just
people
never
love a quiz.
We'll have people in the audience to keep an eye out, so. And Mick LaGalaxy, he'll probably be there, so watch, keep your eye on him. And the reason I mention him, by the way, is because as of this podcast going out, it's his birthday.
Hey, happy birthday, Mick.
Happy birthday, Mick. I don't think he listens to the podcast, but happy birthday anyway, Michael. And I hope you have a good one. Speaking of gigs, I went to see Elaine May last week in the Workman's Club. Colm had an amazing comment on this. He went, I would have gone if I wasn't there. And I was like, you're literally on holidays. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't count.
If I was,
I don't think I quite said it that way, Dave. Okay, with the double negative and the weird confusion.
Yeah, that's my old band, Dave and the double negatives and the weird confusion.
I'm assuming it was outstanding.
It was fantastic. Yeah. It was great. I loved it. And, you know, not just because she's a friend of the show and she was one of the stars of No Encore Live 2.
Yeah,
it was a
fantastic.
great set. And, you know, you guys missed out. So there you go. Should have been there.
My wine tasting was great, though.
Let's not talk about the wine tasting. Let's talk about something that you do like, though. The Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Now, okay. Why are we talking about the Super Bowl? I'll tell you why. Because Justin Timberlake confirmed on Sunday night that he is going to headline this year's Super Bowl halftime show 14 years after the singer's role in Janet Jackson's infamous wardrobe malfunction.
Now, before we dive back in
should
time...
Should it be allowed?
Before we dive back in time to that, can we please just have a quick listen to how he revealed it?
Excuse me, sir, do you have the time?
I was going to ask you, sir, if you have the time.
I do have the time.
You do have time?
I do have time.
You do have time?
I do have time.
You do have time?
I do have time.
You're doing the halftime show at the Super Bowl? You do have time!
I'm doing the halftime!
That's not annoying, is it?
When you said, you were very vague beforehand, I was like, are you talking about Janet Jackson's nipple here, or...
It doesn't come across well in podcasts.
Some respect, please, Craig.
Sorry.
But, yeah, himself and Jimmy Fallon being funny and wacky.
This is Super Bowl L-I-I.
52.
Which marks, thank you very much, which marks the record-setting third time that Timberlake will perform at The Big Game, following appearances at Super Bowls 35 and 38? 7? 37. I should know this. I watched WrestleMania growing up, and they used to do Roman numerals. I did classical studies, for fuck's sake. This is an appalling turn for me here. Anyway, it was at the latter Super Bowl in 2004 that Janet Jackson joined Justin Timberlake on stage, and during a joint rendition of Rock Your Body, which is not a good Justin Timberlake song, Timberlake reached...
That's pretty good.
Timberlake reached and pulled off a piece of Jackson's bustier, exposing her bare breast to an audience of millions for 9/16 of a
it
second.
It was not a bare
That's
breast.
What I said.
She had a thing on.
A star.
She had a strange nipple ring thing. Yes.
Well, you know, it might sound like a storm in a teacup, lads, but a decade-long legal battle between the Federal Communications Commission, the NFL, and CBS later ensued over the $550,000 fine.
Yeah, well, it actually kind of really changed the climate in the US in terms of censorship as well, didn't it? Like, the FCC really started cracking down after that on, like, everyone. So it kind of ushered in a kind of very conservative, you know, Bush-era clampdown. So it was bad for everyone, I think.
Well, as people are tired of me pointing out as a strange point of trivia, it also inspired the invention of YouTube, because the guys who invented YouTube were annoyed that they couldn't find places that were hosting this video, and so basically set about writing their own code to do it. So yeah, when you talk about changing the world, that's the sort of impact the moment had.
Yeah. How did Mr. Skin not invent YouTube? Missing out there, Mr. Skin.
So
I don't know what that is.
That's because you're a virtuous figure, unlike Craig Student Fitzpatrick.
Degenerate.
I'm sure you would say that's because you're a virgin.
Are you a Super Bowl guy, though? Are you big into this? Do you
no,
care?
I taped it once the year that Prince played.
Oh, yeah.
If we can date that, I don't know.
2007, was
something
he?
Something like that,
or 2006?
Yeah, back then. Yeah.
It's been a decade
right
ago.
About there, yeah.
It's a terrible sport. I'm sorry to anyone in the room who's a fan.
Oh, Cullen's a fan.
I love football, man.
We'll talk about this later, but it's a sport that's invented for people who go to watch it to talk.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, you're not terribly wrong there. Yeah,
it's not as bad as baseball.
What do you mean not as
exactly
bad?
As bad?
For talking or for...
Yeah, I mean, baseball is just like, oh, we're having a day out and there's a game going on nearby.
Yeah, pretty much. See, I'm down with that. I've gone to fucking test cricket, lads. I've spent 8 hours on a number of days in a row just sitting there.
Cricket unashamedly is proud of the fact that it's a sport invented to watch while you're getting absolutely blitzed.
It literally stops for lunch and tea.
Amazing.
Yeah, and anytime it rains.
Yeah. But
my kind of sport, really.
No, American football, not for me. But that was one of my favourite halftime shows I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, like, to be fair, the halftime show is obviously by now, you know, bigger than the game itself. Basically, at least in terms of viewer numbers and all the rest of it.
The last couple of years have been great, have they?
I saw the one last year. I was in New York at the time, and it was Coldplay.
Yeah. Last year, it was Lady Gaga earlier this year.
Yeah.
I think, you probably maybe have to go back to Beyonce's to find the last one that you were really like, holy shit, that was actually class.
Yeah.
I thought Gaga was okay. I mean, like, I thought she...
People kind of like Bruno Mars. Was that the following year? I didn't think much of that, to be honest.
Did he not join Coldplay on stage?
Yeah,
no,
but
he did.
He'd previously headlined himself. It was just before...
Yeah, with the Chili Peppers helping
him out as well. Is there a definitive one? You mentioned YouTube. So is there a definitive one to go onto YouTube and be like, this is the one?
Prince was
awesome. Tom Petty was amazing.
Tom Petty was great.
Springsteen?
I quite enjoyed Springsteen's, but
he was
a bit cheesy,
wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, also...
frankly,
as well, like, Springsteen's, you know...
There was an amazing crotch shot where he, like, slid on his knees at a camera and, like, oh, shit, I can't stop, and then smashed into that camera.
When did this
start,
by the way? I mean, like, I know it's the biggest thing ever now, but, like it hasn't always been
It used to be marching bands and stuff and really kind of old-fashioned things. I think maybe the late 80s. Jackson was the first big one.
Is there an example of someone who, like...
I think they parody it in Simpsons, don't they? Hooray for everyone. There was an actual real life thing like that. I can't remember what they were called.
Yeah, is there an example of like of someone where it was like, whoa, that was a bad booking. They shouldn't have done it.
No, I don't think so.
Coldplay.
Because Yeah, but you see, like, even Coldplay. I mean, yeah, like, Coldplay got completely upstaged by the fact that they brought on guests and all the rest of it.
Yeah, they were
but
kind of peripheral.
By the time you get through the whole sort of, like, production razzmatazz of it, it's going to look like a big show anyway, so it barely fucking matters who you book. But yeah, if you're going to pick three, I would say Tom Petty, Prince, and Beyonce. Look those up.
Okay, big show at the big game. Now, Craig, when you're not watching American football, you do tend to enjoy lurking and occasionally posting on the Drowned in Sound message board.
This is true.
I used to, back in the day, I was a frequent poster. I will never reveal who I was on it. I think you guys...
I've tracked you down.
Yeah, well, don't go into it.
Anyway, nonetheless.
This, by the way, is the true reason why Craig didn't come to studio the day Sean Adams was recording with us.
He didn't want to sell out. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, like, a
labor... Remember when I first met him and I was just like, big fan of your work? I was actually starstruck.
And you're like, what will the drone sound lads think of me now? Yeah. I've sold out by being nice to Sean Adams. He's a nice person, by the way. He's really good on the podcast.
He is, yeah.
A Labour MP in the UK has apologised for any offence caused by a series of derogatory online comments made about celebrities before he was elected. Jared O'Mara joked about having an orgy with members of Girls Aloud, claimed that Michelle McManus only won Pop Idol, quote-unquote, because she was fat, and suggested that it'd be funny if jazz star Jamie Cullum was, quote-unquote, sodomized with his own piano. The comments were made on the Drown and Sound message board back in about 2004, I believe.
Yeah,
this was a Guardian story this week, and Sean Adams and Derek Robertson from Drown and Sound were like, made it, ma, top of the world.
And he has since been suspended. By the Labour Party.
Do you think that this is, you know, should it be allowed? I mean, like, what do you think?
I mean, okay, first of all, I think we have to start being realistic about
drudging up the ghosts of people's past.
So long ago. And the chap's still relatively, like, he's in his mid-30s, I think.
Yeah.
So this was when he was a gobshite student, probably.
Probably, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
I thought he was being hilarious, I guess, or ironic, or I don't
Secondly,
know.
Secondly, Jamie Cullum, I mean... I got on all right with the bloke the only time I talked to him, to be honest. Yeah. But I think we've probably all had that thought.
Craig,
once
was
or
it
twice
you?
Now.
Was it
I
you who
interviewed
had to
him
him
on
but
the
but did,
phone?
Didn't you have to ring him like 10
he
times?
He was driving to Northern Ireland and the signal was dreadful and it kept dropping off. But he would then quite happily pick back up. But it was like half an hour of. Consisting of maybe 25 calls.
I remember you like going to different phones in the office with like a fucking black
cloud. Yeah, I was like, Jamie, so tell me about the jazz album.
I had a similar experience interviewing Newton Faulkner over the phone.
Oh,
he
wow.
was on a train or something. And a classic case though of like nice guy shame about the music. He was really sound.
But what? You know. Call kept dropping.
Yeah, constantly.
Yeah, Jamie Cullum was lovely. Did
dreams catch it?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Big mates with Clint Eastwood, which I was...
Jamie Cullum?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like great mates.
Yeah, they're really good
Clint's
buddies.
Clint's into his jazz and yeah.
Cullum's microphone has decided to decamp itself. So yeah. David Tapley, can you please rescue this? What do you think about people who post abuse about musicians online, Dave?
I don't know. It's a difficult one to say because, I mean, the comments were... Not particularly innocuous. They're pretty horrible things to say about people.
Anyone,
who,
yeah.
Yeah, anyone. Like, so, I guess, yeah, digging stuff up. I mean, I'm sure you don't have to go too far into my Bebo comments to find some pretty
I really want to know why you want Sarah Harding out of Girls Aloud, because, like...
Not go down this path.
Girls Aloud power ranking, go.
Jesus. Cheryl... Sarah, Kimberly,
stop
Nadine,
stop doing this.
Nicola.
You know that I'm referring it to in order of their talent and vocal ability,
of course,
and nothing else, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much what they've done in their lives since, I think.
So for me, it'd be Kimberly. I won't finish the sentence.
Let's talk about Kid Rock, will we?
Well,
safe territory.
Wait. We're not done hauling this ladder over the coals just yet. Craig, as someone who posts on the Drown and Sound message board...
Is there anything I'm concerned about?
Is there any dirt that we could dig out about you?
Well, I'm not planning to run for office, so I think I'm all right, but there's probably embarrassing stuff. I don't think I'm a hateful person, though, so hopefully nothing that you could rig me over the coals for.
When was the last time you posted?
I'd say it's a long time.
It's not a long time. I went through your post there.
When?
Oh, no.
It's about a year, is it?
No, it's not.
What are you talking about?
You posted about Game of Thrones this summer. You posted pictures of your cats this summer. You posted about the Lizzie Goodman book this summer.
You've been posting pictures of your
cats
on
the Drown
and Sound message
board. Hold on a second. How do you... What?
I tracked you down, buddy.
Oh, my God.
To be honest with you, it's well, Craig, like, we're going to recognise your cats. So
this is interesting. Wow. I've actually met people from Drown and Sound before.
Oh yeah,
in real life, yeah,
like a meetup type thing.
Yeah,
an internet meetup.
Yeah,
and you know,
dreadfully disappointing.
Nothing went wrong
for them.
You have to bring a chaperone to that, just in case they weren't too.
Yes, he's the subject of a Channel 4 documentary. I won't reveal your name on there. I don't understand your name on there. I have to say,
I explained it to you before.
I still don't understand it.
You were drunk.
Five letters, by the way. Try and track him down.
Right up.
I actually changed it. So I don't know how you...
Did you?
Yeah.
I'll find it again.
All right, okay.
Okay. In the meantime, we've all been gazumped, guys. We've all been lied to by Kiddington Rock.
Kiddington Rockefeller.
It was all a goof. Kid Rock admitted on Tuesday morning that his tease about running for Senate in Michigan was all a joke to promote his new album, Sweet Southern Sugar.
And it should be said, given that we've all pre-ordered the album,
Deluxe
jokes
edition.
On us, right?
Deluxe edition that comes wrapped in a Confederate flag.
Yeah.
And the more you unpack it, the worse you feel about yourself as a human being. He said, fuck no, I'm not running for Senate. Are you fucking kidding me? Who fucking couldn't figure that out?
Apparently
said,
us.
Said Robert Ritchie, who was 46 years of age, by the way, and sees the need to curse like Colin Farrell in 2003. He was telling all this to Craig's boy, Howard Stern. Craig, in these problematic times, how can you defend being a fan of Howard Stern?
Jesus Christ. Because he's the king of all media. You kidding me?
I was just going to say that I do like how Kid Rock is acting like a 13-year-old boy who has asked a girl out via text message, and then when she says no, he replies by saying, oh, that was just one of my friends. He stole my phone and did this.
I was hacked.
I was hacked. Yeah, so...
I'm amazed he, like, still has a career based on very little output music.
You realise he was elected president of the United States, don't you? There is enough of a fan base to keep him going, I think, unfortunately. Mm. No, but clearly, like... That's the demographic for Kid Rock fans. I'm sorry if I'm offending any avant-garde Kid Rock listeners.
No, it's very true. I mean, at the same time, yeah, this interview, he talked about running seven houses and how he's so obscenely wealthy, and it just got a bit depressing for me at that point, to be honest.
He was proud that he got endorsement from the White House. See, there you go. The outspoken rocker, who referred to the New York Times as, quote, a little bit gay during the hour-long appearance when taking shots at...
That's a bad thing. That
is proof that he's going full-on 13-year-old boy, like...
When taking shots...
In the 90s.
At the left-wing media. All the snowflakes out there said there... I say ironically, obviously. Said there was no way that he was ever really going to run, knowing that the closest he's ever come to higher office was snagging the Class Clown Award in high school.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So he's just a patriot, lads.
You're actually a big Howard Stern fan.
Oh yeah, I listen to him constantly. He's great. Have you ever listened to Ratio? He's extremely talented, dude.
I think he is possibly the most annoying person with a microphone in front of him.
Next to Dave? Or
he is sitting next to me. Yes, that's correct. You are geographically correct.
Mm. Mm. Nice turnaround.
You find him annoying? I think he's great.
I think he's annoying.
All right.
I can't believe he still has a career.
Howard Stern?
You can't believe he
peaked in the 90s. Like,
people love it, though.
He got a half like a billion dollar deal in 2005 to go to satellite.
Yeah, that's serious, right?
He's like one of the highest paid entertainers in the world.
How is he bulletproof?
And he's... What do you mean, bulletproof?
Well, I mean, like he's raunchy and says...
Yeah, because he does it publicly on the air for like the past 35 years. He's got like no skeletons in his closet.
Do you still listen? Do you listen on the reg?
I'd say I listen to it maybe once a month. Like, you have to... torrent it, and I mean, I legally subscribe. Yeah, but I'll check it out now and again. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, really good. It's funny actually that, you know, he kind of compares to the President of the United States in that, like, not having any shame gets you quite a long way these days.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing of just
okay,
like,
Craig. Well, as long as we're reheating Howard Stern content, what should we talk about next?
Let's talk about Billy Corgan, or as he's known now,
William Patrick Corgan.
Yeah, he's actually been on Howard Stern quite a lot. Have you listened to any of his interviews?
No,
I'm the only one.
The only one. Yeah.
So he was on also this week, and essentially what he was saying was, well, he was talking about, you know, like Billy Corgan's like been on InfoWars, and he's going down a bit of a dangerous path in terms of conspiracies and stuff. Well, they were talking kind of around that, and it came out that he's actually seen in real life a shape-shifting reptilian?
Of some sort, yeah. He says, like, you know, have you ever been in a situation where you turn around and someone who was there just looks different?
Can Dave and Cullum read the dialogue
dramatic
as if...
Dramatic reenactment.
Who's who? I'll be...
You're Corgan.
Okay.
And you are Howard Stern.
So you have to be the dickhead in this, Cullum.
Okay.
And you have to be the other dickhead.
Are we doing voices or just us?
Yes, voices.
Oh, I have to do, like, an American accent.
Yes.
Hey, Howard. Imagine you're doing something and suddenly you turn around and there's somebody else standing there.
Like a different human?
Sort of. It's hard to explain without going into detail. I'd rather not go into details.
But did you say to that person, what did you just have to do there?
Yeah, and they acknowledged it.
And what did they say they were, from another planet?
They wouldn't explain. Corgan added there was a really messed up story. Now, this is not like...
By the way, that was a great Corgan. Yeah, yeah. That was on point.
And scene.
I wanted and scene. I want you to go deeper on that one, man. Mm. Not like, you know, follow the money deeper, but like your voice.
Get into character.
I tried on the cuff of it. Now listen, Corey Taylor of Slipknot fame, who is great when he's doing Slipknot stuff and pretty terrible when he's not doing Slipknot stuff, he was on Chris Jericho's podcast before. I listened to that, and he recorded the third Slipknot record, Volume 3, The Subliminal Verses, in Rick Rubin's Haunted Mansion. And even though Corey Taylor has given out numerous times about Rick Rubin not being there enough, like a fucking, you know, he's got like abandonment issues, it's the best Slipknot album by a country fucking mile, and I don't think that's a coincidence. Now, he said that when he was showering once, he got out of the shower, and he saw, through his peripheral vision, in the next room, in the bedroom, a man in a suit. And it wasn't Craig Fitzpatrick.
Slender Man.
And, not on that occasion.
And he said that he was like, you know, I wasn't on anything. I definitely saw this person. So, yeah, there's plenty of musicians who claim to have had an encounter with the other side.
At the Castlepalooza Festival in 2016, Charleville Castle, I believe, has famously haunted crypts.
Leagues O'Toole?
Leagues O'Toole said he saw a floating, globulous sort of white figure, and he... I think he was with someone as well, and they both saw it. So the truth is out there. That's all I'm going to say.
My aunt saw a dead person before, and they were animated and talking.
Dead person,
yeah.
Talk
to a dead person.
All right. They
were alive.
Is this like that great urban legend where it's like someone's driving on like a country road down the end of the Irish countryside, and like some guy walks out in front of a car, and like they jam on the brakes, and then your woman gets out of the car, and she's like, it's always a woman and a guy, and she's like, what the hell are you doing? And he goes, you got to be careful on these roads. And then she's like, what, you walked out in front of me, it's ridiculous. And he goes, no, trust me, I died on this road. And it's like,
do you know what? Do you know what? Road safety authority. Far away. It was when she was a postwoman and she was doing her rounds and she was like delivering letters to some like block of flats or something on the north side.
Candyman was there, was he?
Some kind of older gent, really nice guy, was just like walking past her. And then he's like, oh, my son does that. He's a postman. And they got chatting and she was like, oh, but my work and blah, blah, blah. And it turned out she did know the son. She was only there about 6 months.
And then he was like, he's been dead for 25 years.
They were just chatting away, had a nice conversation, just like, I haven't seen him lately, just say hi, blah, blah, blah. She went back and like, I don't know, a couple of days later, she bumped into your man and just, without thinking, was just like, I was chatting to your dad. And he was like, my dad's been dead for 5 years.
Jesus.
And we've given her enough of a grilling about, oh, this like was obviously a stupid joke, and now it was... He was actually dead.
You're listening to No Afterlife.
Yeah. Oh, how grim.
There will be an encore.
I hope there's an encore in this situation. I don't think there will be, though. I think once your brain shuts down, that's it. Quick round the horn. Quick round the horn. Do we believe in ghosts? Craig?
Yeah.
Tapley?
No.
Cullen?
No.
I'm going to say yes.
Thanks.
All right, split down the middle.
I've heard things, I haven't seen things, but I've heard things that I can't explain.
Well, we're putting
including
things...
the Will Smith song from last week. I just can't explain
very
it.
True. Yeah, glad I avoided that.
And by the way, sorry, just a quick reference on last week's show. Thanks for people's feedback about the horrors interview. People said nice stuff, even though obviously the audio was rather compromised by the fact that I was an idiot and I recorded it outside. I want to thank
people. The audio's been compromised. Get out.
I want to thank people who said nice things. But if you were listening to the show and you're like, look, it's just too much, I can't listen to it. That interview's in print now. If you go to thethinair.net, the whole interview is transcribed. It's online. And give it a read because it was really good. And thanks to Finn and to Pete for setting up that interview and for the horrors for being dead on at the same time. Did my best, guys. What can you do? Now, before we get to Songs of the Week this week, let's just check back in with David Tapley for a second.
Mm-hmm.
What's the status on the new album? Before we get there, there's something I want to bring up.
Go for it.
I'm not happy about something. Well, two things, really. One, you've cut your hair. Now, it looks great.
Thank you.
This came after John Barker from Totally Irish on 98FM, who is a friend of the show and a good, good man. He basically just fucking... fell in love with you when he went on the show, and he said that Tapley has the best hair in the Irish music scene, and you did not deny this.
Yeah.
So it's... Are you running with this?
I see my hair a lot less than everyone else sees it.
And you cut your own hair.
I cut my own hair, like Bill Gates. Bill Gates cuts his own hair.
Does he?
Bill Gates... Have you seen Bill Gates?
Are you sure he did? Yeah, yeah, well, no, it's true, yeah. I would imagine that the Bill Gates programs a robot to cut it for him.
Well, you don't get rich.
Are you also not going to give, like, your kids any of your fortune?
He doesn't have kids, Craig. Yeah. Do your homework.
And no fortune.
Hang on a second. So, you're on live radio. I understand that you might have felt under some pressure to just go along what was being said and being coerced by John Barker, who's famously leading with his interviews.
That guy is a charlatan. He's
a sham.
He's a shambles.
If you listen, John, you're a sham. So, hang on. This is your chance to own this or to be like, no, someone else has better hair. Jeff Courtney, for example.
I don't know. Why do I keep getting asked about this?
Like, he's got a mane. He's got a mane on you.
I'm going to shave my head, maybe.
I think you're making him uncomfortable.
I am. Yeah. Let's ask about the album. What's the story? I know you're hard working.
On the same topic of the 98FM, I did like
your attempt to try and tear me down a peg, take me down a peg, via the website twitter.com.
I was unacknowledged by John Barker that evening, yes.
Well, all I want to say is you keep your opinions to yourself, mate.
Okay.
That's not good timing as we move towards songs of the week.
But before we get there, album update, seeing as I've asked three times now.
Yeah, album update. It is on its way. We have a new single coming out in November, which is called Nightclub, open parentheses, I sold my soul to the devil, close parentheses. And we shot a music video for it recently, and it's going to be hopefully out before our Dublin show, which is on
November 7th.
Tuesday, November 7th. Yes. Upstairs at Whelan's.
So hopefully we can...
And listeners, if you haven't heard the current single, Where Are You There When They Crucified the Birthday Boy, it's great. Get on it. And it would be a good one for Songs of the Week, but it's already been released.
It has.
So we got five other songs to do.
We do indeed. And
it'd be a bit weird
one.
If he reviewed his own song as well.
Yeah.
Love it. Brilliant song.
The first one is called To the Moon and Back. It's the new one from a returning Fever Ray. Sounds like this. Yeah, so Fever Ray, who always makes me stop ever so slightly and think, no, not Sugar Ray. This is not a strange comeback from the 1997 morning.
Can I give props to Sugar Ray for a second?
If you want.
They did a really good cover for The Beach of a Brian Eno song, and I'm completely forgetting the name of it right now, but it's great. And I actually sent it to your pal, Ushian Murphy Hall, and he liked it, I think.
There you go.
Is it the Camel...
It's called Spinning Away. Spinning Away. It's a great song, and it's a good cover.
Yes.
So there you go.
Anyway, Fever Ray is definitively different. Half of the Knife, Karen Dreyer, who, yeah, first released her solo career 8 years ago. This is the second album, which will be out, in fact, by the time you hear this. It's dropping as a surprise.
Is that right?
Thursday midnight, Friday morning.
That's a welcome surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really is, because this is a great song.
Can I ask a question about the song around the table? Mm-hmm. Does the song remind you of any song in particular? If it does, say it now.
The Pokemon music.
Yeah, I was thinking Donkey Kong, kind of like, it's definitely...
I didn't have one in particular.
It has been put to me by a friend of the show, Mark Conroy, that, and it's funny that I mentioned The Beach, that this sounds quite a lot like Pure Shores by All Saints. And I can hear the elements. I don't think it's a direct...
little bit.
I think there's elements of it.
There's a little bit.
But it has that
bit.
Kind of, you know, very kind of, you know, almost calypso.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, not to...
Which is a banger, yeah.
Not to state the most blatantly obvious thing you possibly could, but...
Take that, Mark Conroy.
Well, this probably sounds most like The Knife than as anything she's done, as in terms of its exuberance, in terms of like it's not as dark.
She usually goes a lot darker. That's fair to say.
Also, can I point out on Spotify there is an air horn edit. Now, granted,
I haven't listened to that, but when I saw it, I was like, yes.
It's literally just an air horn over the word pussy, but nonetheless,
how good is the air horn though?
It's a pretty good air horn. Yeah.
Love an air horn.
It's strong.
No, this is a great song. Very welcome comeback. And yeah, I that kind of calypso thing is definitely there. I thought it kind of subverted some of the more boring kind of Tropicalia stuff we've been hearing as well, and just sped it up a lot. It's like contagious energy. I loved it.
I don't get calypso. As I said, the Pokemon music, it kind of reminded me of like K-pop or something. J-pop, I guess.
There's definitely a little bit of that.
I really like this song. I have to say, I felt that the reveal line of the word pussy at the end, I thought it was I kind of like laughed at it. I thought it was funny.
Just
it took me out of
the song.
But no, it kind of seemed like a Tenacious D punchline of a song that starts off sweet and kind of middle of the road love song and then has this shocking word at the end.
I had a similar experience. I kind of was like, wait, what, really? Like, I was like, I thought you were meant to be a bit more opaque and esoteric and not as on the nose as this. Didn't bother me per se, but it took me out of it a little bit. I don't think it was designed to do that.
That's kind of funny.
I feel like it was intentional. No,
really?
Yeah, because I had that reaction as well, and clearly,
but I don't think it's like good commentary. I just thought like, oh, okay, Fair enough.
Yeah. I just think it was the execution they were going for.
Yeah, I think it's a tune. I'm very, very curious about the record now, and I wonder if this is going to be an outlier, considering, you know, yeah, you think about songs like Keep the Streets Empty for Me and that kind of thing. And yeah, actually, I remember I interviewed author John Connolly before, and he has a show on 2XM. I think it's ABC to XDC. It's a really good radio show. And he was saying that, like, he couldn't get clearance to use a Karen Anderson track, but he had some correspondence with her. And I was like, oh my God, what does correspondence with Karen Anderson look like? And he was like, pretty much like what you think it would. But he was devastated that she wouldn't let him use a Fever Ray track for some professional capacity. So if you're listening, Karen, give the man a break. He's a good writer. What's next?
Well, mentioning taking inspiration from K-pop, J-pop and other areas like that, a new one from TuneYards has landed. It's called Look at Your Hands. Tapley, this one to your liking?
Yeah, no, I thought this was really good. I saw TuneYards last time they, or last time she.
It's they now, officially, yeah, okay. Nate Brenner's part of it.
Right.
Clearly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought they played in Vicar Street a couple of years back. I thought it was really boring. I was kind of underwhelmed by the whole thing. It was a lot of drums, a lot of drumming,
a lot of drums.
Yeah, a lot of beats, you
What's
know.
What's wrong with
and,
that?
It's just, it was a bit overwrought by the end of it, but... I do like this song. Production-wise, I think it's fantastic. It does some fairly good 80s throwback stuff, which is...
I caught TuneYards at Electric Picnic headlining Body and Soul, I think it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe. And I remember I was working like a dog for Hot Press that day, and I missed a lot of stuff, including Girl Band and other things. And then I remember working on a news story in the media tent, and the computer crashed just as I was about to finish it. So I was like stressed out to my eyeballs.
I remember that song stood on the cable, yeah.
And I remember finally getting to go and see something, and it was TuneYards at like midnight, and I was with a friend. And I was in a good mood because I finally escaped the hell of what I was doing. And it was lovely. And I remember just that set. And I remember like being there and actually feeling like, oh, this is what, it, you know, people who love festivals experience, I suppose, at festivals.
Festival goers. And,
revelers, you
yeah,
might
revelers,
say.
Punters.
Was it raining? It wasn't raining. It was just perfect, man. It was great.
And
I quite like TuneYards. And I think that she's better at that kind of, you know, like, I'll just throw in a weirdly sexual lyric out of nowhere, but it gets away with it with her cadence and her delivery and her general sense of humor. I really enjoyed this. I think it might be a bit overproduced, but that's, maybe that's just me.
I'm fine with the production, to be honest, kind of disco beats and, like you say, the throwback sort of electronics. I really enjoyed this. In a press release, she says it's kind of the first single from what's going to be a deeply political album. And well, no, I mean, here's the thing. I don't know if that's possibly going to shine through. I
Your
don't think
deeply
political,
political
lyricism and this sort of music is necessarily compatible. And if this single is an example of what that's going to sound like, then I don't think it's going to negatively affect in the slightest, because frankly it didn't stop this from being a banger.
Yeah. I don't think me and this sort of music is that compatible, because I found it really annoying. It was just
yeah,
like,
I guess maybe boring was a bad word to use to describe the gig that I went to. I think it was actually just annoying.
Yeah, it kind of like insists upon itself. I don't know. You know, the production, I mean, amazing technique there, but it just felt cluttered to me. There was a lot going on, and I couldn't really kind of wrap my head around it in a way that made it enjoyable. So I didn't enjoy it.
Fair enough. That's concise as a guess.
Well, you know, he's moving into advertising, so it's very important that he gets to the point quickly. And I feel like over the next few months, you're going to hear a different Craig. You're going to hear a more kind of a more jaded,
cutthroat.
A more jaded, if you can imagine such a thing. Definitely a more ruthless and cutthroat individual who just wants to. What was that phrase that you learned this week? Interrogate the product until it speaks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair Fuck enough. Sake.
As you do. another producer who has made a name for invention and experimentation, Sophie, and now embarks on a solo project, the first single called It's Okay to Cry. And I saw the magazine you were reading, and I read the page. And if I had just one single wish, wish I could have said this. It's okay to cry. Was that a teardrop in your eye? I never thought I'd see you cry. Just for whatever. Now, this is an artist who's come up before on the basis of her production work, Charlie XCX, perhaps being the most notable on this particular show, but basically a huge figure within PC music. Now embarking solo, it's definitely a little bit of a different from the day job, I suppose, isn't it?
I agree with the message and the sentiment. It is okay to cry. It's a cathartic act of release, and I recommend doing so. If you ever need to, listener, you know, just embrace those emotions. I thought this song insisted upon itself, and I found it a bit annoying. Maybe it's because I'm not really into that kind of ASMR thing or whatever it's called. There's a lot of whispering in this song, and it was nails on a chalkboard to me. Really was. And I didn't... Oh, don't do it, man. And yeah, I couldn't connect. Please. I couldn't connect with this one. I thought it was a bit too proud of itself.
Yeah, I mean, proud of itself is the thing. Like, when you say you like the sentiment, I kind of did as well until, like, listen number 5, and I was like, is this really what they're going for, or is it just some weirdly ironic thing? Because obviously she's kind of flipped different musical forms and types, and I feel lyrically with this, it's that kind of thing as well. Yeah, I mean, the kind of compilation she released recently enough, Product, I think. I liked a lot of her stuff. BIP was kind of a big PC music thing. It announced that movement, and sonically, a lot of interesting stuff going on. But in a solo capacity, and especially over a longer course, it really does start to drain, I think.
Well, I mean, the one thing that has to be pointed out is, even though we're quite familiar with Sophie at this stage, this has to be treated as something not far off a debut single. Like, the video itself was literally the reveal, because we hadn't really seen who we were dealing with up to this point. And also, I mean, a lot of PC music productions have kind of been accused of swapping exuberance at the sort of price of emotion. And so, I mean, maybe it's just a learning process to see how the two of those can fit together here. Because, I mean, I have to agree, I wasn't a big fan of this song, because even though it is heartfelt and whatnot, it's just maybe lacking in style.
Is it actually heartfelt?
I think so.
That's where I kind of left with it. I kind of didn't know what sort of ratio of irony to sincerity we're dealing with, because you've got this very plainly emotional, or clearly emotional lyric that Sophie is singing, but then you've got these stock explosion sounds
undermines. Yeah.
And I just didn't know what to make of what she was saying, I guess. I'm not too familiar with the PC music thing outside of, like, Hey Cutie and stuff like that, which is, again, I don't know where that lands on the irony spectrum, but if it is supposed to be ironic, it sucks. And if it's supposed to be sincere, then I think it's amazing. But I just don't really understand it.
Wow.
Well, you know,
somewhere,
like,
on the scale.
Context is everything.
Who could follow that? Let's have another song.
Let's find somebody to follow it in the form of Franz Ferdinand. As Dave would say, they're back. It's called Always Ascending. Sounds like this.
Always and always and always ascending. Opening line leads an uncertain ending. Always and always and always ascending. The cards seem too broad, but
yeah, it's not far off 15 years since, I guess, we first introduced to Franz Ferdinand. Are we glad to see them return, Craig?
Yeah, I think so. I really enjoyed their collaboration with Sparks. I think it lit a bit of a fire under them. With Always Ascending, I mean, I don't think they're ever going to hit the heights again. But yeah, this was a welcome kind of addition to the Franz Ferdinand canon. It kind of did some interesting structural stuff that reminded me of, like, something like a Jacqueline. It actually starts off sounding like Neil Hannon or something. And we get some, you know, of their cintier end of things. But I thought it worked. It had a lot more intent. It seemed like they knew what they were doing. They weren't, like, half-arsing it. Like, they sounded like on the likes of Tonight at times. So, yeah, a welcome return for me.
I was glad to hear them back, because it basically meant that I went back to the self-titled record. And
right on.
That fucking holds up.
Yeah, of course.
That's a terrific record.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that they kind of peaked with that record. And what a great one and done band they would have been, eh?
The second album like arrived less than a year later and it was just as good.
It's not just as good. That's a ludicrous statement.
I think it actually holds together better. It doesn't have the peaks.
I don't agree. I think the third album has some good stuff on it.
Yeah, but they waited too long, I think, to release the third one.
They did. This is fine. It's way too long and it sounds... It's fine. It's grand. I mean, like, it's harmless. It's toothless.
The drumming is brilliant.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
It reminded me of The Outsiders from the second album in terms of like really prominent drums.
They have a new member, don't they? Someone left, didn't they?
Yeah, Nick McCarthy left, who was the kind of co-founder, to spend time with his family.
Earlier on, Tapley, you said, and I quote, Alex Kapranos is a don.
He's an absolute baller. Love Alex Kapranos. There's a film that I went to see with my friend Big Oisin Murphy Hall in the Sugar Club, the name of which I can't remember, but it's about Chemical Underground, French record label. And... the filmmaker stays up late at night drinking beers with Alex Kapranos, and there's one scene where he talks about the merits of the dole, which a lot of people are negative about, and it's very easy for pricks to talk about how artists are lazy and they don't deserve to be claiming taxpayer money. But Alex
Kapranos, they're probably Conor McGregor fans, and Conor McGregor got the dole before he was famous, so now they're fucked and they can't say anything.
Well, edit that out, please. And,
no.
And basically, to condense it, as he says, that one band who are on the dole, if they make it big, the amount of money they pay back in tax pays for thousands of other bands in Scotland to do anything. And they were the band to do it. There's probably plenty of other bands before them.
Yeah.
But no, anyone who's on the dole is lazy, according to...
But so many massive British bands have talked that before, like the likes of Stone Roses and stuff, have talked about how they wouldn't have been a band if the dole wasn't there.
No, of course.
And we've talked before about how... It's so tough to even like make a living in music now that it's just becoming kind of a middle class thing, which we don't want. We want some, you know.
I mean, at the same time, I'm not sure if the flag waving kind of champions of the, you know, downtrodden would be Franz Ferdinand. Aren't they all like art schooly types?
Yeah. But you can be arty and
I don't disagree
class,
there, yeah.
You snob.
What do you think of the song?
I think it's great, yeah. No, the three times.
I thought it felt a little bit forced.
Force is long. It's going through the motions.
It's just the amount of synths.
Disco Odyssey.
It's the synths in there that are getting to me. Yeah, it just sounds like... Especially because there's enough of the sort of trademark stuff there in terms of the jangly guitars and blah, blah, blah. It sounds like they tried to write a song in the way that they used to write a song and found that it was just not really working.
I disagree. This sounded to me like it was effortless, whereas a lot of the, like the last album, which was hailed as like a return to form, it sounded like them going, what worked before? Let's just try and do that. Whereas this felt a lot more natural to me. I don't know.
I think they were able to push the boat out. If they did it.
Yeah.
Naturally, without seeming forced. Can I say something before we go into the next tune, if that's what you're indicating there, Dave?
Don't ruin the magic.
I want to tear open the curtain and reveal what's happening. You said the Franz Ferdinand would be a great one-and-done band.
Uh-huh.
I can't think of many one-and-done bands. Can you give me what comes to mind when you think that? Because a friend of mine was distraught when he found out that American Football were releasing their second album because it takes them off the list of...
If I don't have an example to hand, Tapley, mm-hmm. am I still allowed to be the host of this podcast?
No, Craig is now the host of the podcast.
Sorry, everybody.
I think Craig might go with me if I say Battles on a one and done band.
Yeah.
No.
Second
album.
You want an example.
But in terms of this would be an incredible standalone legacy.
You want an example of only one album.
Like, Jeff Buckley is an example I can think of.
There only was one album.
Oh, sorry, that's what he's was only
The Lads.
The Lads only had one album, okay. Yeah.
Let's have a think about
it. Dead air, but next week you can...
Let's finish out this week's Songs of the Week.
Fuck you.
First.
And, coming to my show.
Selena Gomez calling in the help of Marshmallow for a song called Wolves. Stars in the sky. I've been running through the jungle, I've been running with the wolves to get to you, to get to you. I've been down the darkest alley, saw the dark side of the moon to get to you, to get to you. I look for love and every stranger took too much to ease the anger. All for you, yeah, all for you. I've been running through the jungle, I've been crying with the wolves to get to you. Dave, you are a
resident
Gomez head. What do you call yourselves?
Scenesters, because she was in a band called Selena Gomez and
Scenesters.
Seleniac. Okay, I'm a Selena Gomez fan. She won me over with the Revival record, and more specifically the lead single, Good For You, which is one of the best pop songs of the last 5 years. Now, she has released a couple of tracks off, I don't know if she has a new album coming.
No, we don't know. She's actually said she has enough for two.
We had Bad Liar, which was the Talking Heads-influenced pop jam of the summer, and we had Fetish with Gucci Mane, which I also enjoyed. I think Bad Liar, by the way, for my money, is one of the best songs of the year, just so you know. Now, this is called Wolves, and it's with Marshmello. Who the hell is Marshmello, and why does he look so strange? Marshmello is an electronic dance music producer and DJ. He first gained international recognition by remixing songs by Jack U and Zed, and later collaborated with artists including Omar Lynx, OK, Jazz and Slushy. I don't know who these people are. I'm reading his Wikipedia. He wears a custom helmet for public appearances, and his identity is unknown.
Yeah, basically he's based himself on Dead.
I do know his Drowning Sound username, though, so...
Okay, so...
It's Marshmello.
Yeah. I had seen this guy pop up on, like, videos in the gym. So I've got, like, you know, a music video on with no sound.
Right.
And I was like, who the fuck is this Lego-looking
prick?
Tinly
veiled, I go to the gym comment.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Anyway...
I'm ripped to shreds, as anybody... Yeah, so... And then I saw him pop up on the artwork of my beloved Selena Gomez. I was like, what the fuck? This is a misstep from her, I believe. Once you get to that chorus, it gets a bit Maniac 2000 with some of those synths.
Yes!
Yeah, that's what it was. I was wondering if anybody else would agree.
I had Maniac 2000.
Okay, I believe it. Also, what's with your notes? You've got so many drawings and spiral and weird things.
I'm anxious because Tapley's here. Jesus. I don't want to mess up. So
It's last week on the show, George Morahan referenced when we're talking about the Will Smith song. He said, this isn't even Zeitgeist chasing. This is like club, dance, you know,
it's
play
if,
it at a fucking cruise.
This
ship.
Reminds me a lot of Coldplay Chainsmokers song from earlier this year.
A lot
year
better than that. And what annoys me is I think the chorus is when it loses. I think the build-up is great. I think the atmosphere is good. I think she's good on it, but the chorus is just, it's all wrong.
Yeah, the verse like has a really kind of nice cascading melody. It's like there's kind of, you know, not quite boundary pushing, but interesting stuff going on, but it's all orbiting this real like clunker of a chorus. This very obvious kind of hands in the air thing that does sound like maybe the XX trying to tackle Maniac 2000, which... sounds better than this.
I'm strictly not trying to make a pun when I say that it does sound like the chorus has just been like lifted in from somewhere else and just kind of dropped into the middle of this song.
It's a real we need a chorus.
Is that a pun?
Why is it a pun?
Because she had a kidney transplant.
What?
That's what this song is.
I thought you were going for like a marshmallow being dropped into a hot chocolate.
Sorry, chaps. Like, can I assume that none of you speak read Latin?
What?
That's Selena Gomez.
What podcast am I on?
What a retort this is.
Okay,
wow, sorry, Jack.
Sorry, has this song actually completely passed you by?
The master debater is back.
Here we go. This song is about her having a kidney transplant.
No, this song is about her having lupus.
Is it?
Lupus being the Latin for wolf.
Oh, right.
And so this song is entirely based on her illness and recovery.
Is it?
This is amazing.
I thought it was just a club banger.
Next thing you're going to tell me, the Magic Dragon is about Sweet Mary Jane.
I mean, put it this way. If it's not, it's a very bizarre coincidence.
Wasn't Maniac 2000 about chronic fatigue syndrome?
Oh, very good.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
funky,
excellent.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to album, Dave. Talk us in.
Hi, how's it going? My name is Dave Hanrady, and there will be no encore. No, this is the album of the week that we're doing. The band are Destroyer. The album's called Ken. This song is called Tinseltown, Swimming in Blood.
I couldn't see, I was blind. Off in the corner, doing poet's work, that's alright for now. It was just a dream of your blue eyes. I couldn't see, I was blind. Off in the corner, doing poet's work, that's alright.
Okay, that's Tinseltown Swimming in Blood. Now, I believe it was yourself, David Tapley, who said to me that you thought that this was a better example. It might not have been you. Someone said to me that this was a better example of the horrors 80ing them, like doing the 80s thing with like Something to Remember Me By on their new record of a similar kind of style. Now, before we get there, for our listeners who don't know who Destroyer is, David Tapley, can we have some background?
Destroyer is a band, or a guy. I'm not really too sure how he delineates, but led, I guess, by Canadian Daniel Behar, who is also in the New Pornographers. And they, I think this is their like 12th album or something outrageous like that. But they kind of came to the mainstream in 2011, possibly. My dates are all off. Yeah. With the record Kaput, which was the first time I'd ever heard of them. Didn't really get on board until the following album, which was an album called Poison Season. And now this, and it's this album, Ken. And it seems that these albums together seem to be this sort of trilogy in my eyes. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Well, if somebody is diving into this artist or band for the first time, I think the thing that will hit you first is Dan Behar's voice. Now, can I ask, as a somewhat of a neutral, I suppose?
Oh, sorry, he's also in the band Swan Lake.
Yeah, you want to talk about that and how wrong you are and how wrong Zara Hedeman is and how wrong basically everyone is?
Yeah,
Swan Lake.
Do you want to talk about that?
It's a band with himself and I believe Spencer Krug of Wolf Parade.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a song called Spider, and I've said it before on the show, and I will say it again. It might be the worst song ever recorded. It is slapdash tripe with an annoying vocal.
I think that's
Let's talk about the vocals, because that's what people are going to kind of gravitate to first. I think,
yes,
if they're ever checking out anything by him. Put plain, and I don't mean this in any kind of derogatory way, is he taking the piss?
No, he's like very much inspired by English music of the 90s, so he name checks in many interviews saying that the band Suede are a big influence on this record.
That's the title of this record, isn't
it?
It
was a
working title for the Wild Ones.
Yeah. And he talks about loving bands like New Order and Morrissey, and he actually references in an interview I briefly read today, talks about he had Pete Doherty in mind for the song Cover from the Sun, which is just kind of surreal to hear.
Okay, a softer version of the question I've asked, is he playing a character?
No, I think it's just people get influenced by certain things, and that's him.
Yeah.
He loves English music of a certain time. He also loves the kind of drama or melodrama or theatrical nature of maybe music that came from the 80s and 90s, which I think one of the reasons why I like him so much is that sort of characteristic is not found in many singers these days, and hasn't really since the early noughties or 90s.
Yeah, I like that manner thing, and I think it works perfectly in terms of the acts he's looking back at, because there's that proud kind of, you know, British tradition of the kind of arty pop thing. I think of like some Billy McKenzie from The Associates, or even, I mean, Suede, Brett's voice, you know, clearly better singers than Dan, but doing that kind of, you know, adopting a character or whatever and going quite theatrical, and I think it works really well. It seems to be like a sticking point for a lot of people, which I was surprised by.
Yeah,
because I really love his voice, even if it's limited. Like, yeah,
quite a few friends who that broke it for them, and
yeah,
regardless of how shit hot his band is, they just can't get past the nature of his accent that he puts on.
Vaudevillian thrust, yeah, of his vocal delivery. Cole Morrigan, where do you land on this?
I'm fine with it, to be honest. Like, it definitely didn't stop me from enjoying it. I mean, yeah, you know, like, I mean, I read much, feeding into much of what you guys were saying, like, you know, that he was considering, like, the late Thatcher years when he was, like, writing this record.
Cool, man,
so
it's about time.
That tells you, you know, kind of like the sort of area, geographical and musically,
yeah,
that he was sort of pitching himself at that point. And I think the whole sort of adopting, if not quite a character, then certainly the characteristics, just sets a tone for this record that at times I found really difficult to shake. Not that I necessarily wanted to, of course, but it opens with Sky's Grey, which is like grim. Like the title suggests, it's kind of bleak and it's bare, yeah, and it's skeletal.
But you know, I think kind of grim in a gorgeous way, like in a Cure way where you just want to dive in, like that's the way
a little bit, but I felt as though it managed to cast a shadow, so to speak, on a lot of the rest of this album, where there are moments where it perhaps wouldn't sound as morose if you just put that one song on. That's certainly the impression that I got. You know, Cover from the Sun is one that you mentioned there, that, you know, he was drawing on Pete Doherty, he said, and it's quite a kind of an upbeat, jangly indie pop.
It sounds like pub rock.
Yeah, but even then, like, lyrics like, I don't know, he's talking about her on her summer of skin that's not hers or something like that, and it sounds way more empty and unfulfilling than it otherwise might, because it's in the kind of, through the sphere and through the lens of this record as a whole.
To clarify my line of questioning, I was doing the everyman thing, guys. You know, for people who might not be...
Sorry, I forgot.
So
you.
It doesn't necessarily mean... No, I'm just letting you know.
Dave, I'm sorry.
Because... One more time.
Really sorry.
I'm really sorry. Thanks, man. You know, you're forgiven. All forgiven. To clarify my own stance on this album, I really enjoyed it. I think it's very good.
What?
I know, right? I really enjoyed it. I found the narrative very interesting. I thought it was very well put together. I greatly enjoyed the use of synths. Some of them in particular are so gorgeous sounding in a way that, for example, last week when we talked about St. Vincent, I found most of the production that to be quite oppressive and overdone. I thought his ear and his choice of just like the textures that he throws into his songs, whether it's a, you know, a raising guitar like line here or there, or again expert use of synths, as I said, I didn't find it hard to stay with him, if that's what you were getting at, Colm. I found it actually very
no, it's not so much.
I thought it worked very well in one go.
I absolutely agree, but that's another thing that should be said about this record, that I occasionally would just pretty much experimenting with it. I'd dive in at track 4 or 5, at which point it sounds like a very different record. So that kind of gives you an idea of the amount of cohesion that was managed with 11 tracks that work much like a film or a book as opposed to anything else.
I think it is a very strange song to open an album with, but maybe it's because of the sort of... I don't know, I think like despite it being a very grim sounding open to an album, it does have this valiant declaration of the lyric... Give up acting. Fuck no. I'm just starting to get the good part.
Sure. Yeah.
Just some great lines.
And that guitar
lines,
yeah. Like,
is valiant in its way. Like, and it carries you through. Like, there's the glimmer of hope. I've said it so many times on this podcast and in my reviews. I'm always into music that offers you the glimmer of hope and the glint of light. And I got that on this record. And I mean, a track like A Light Travels Down the Catwalk is phenomenal,
yeah.
I thought. And
yeah,
but
great
tune. This reminded me a lot of Ariel Pink's album dedicated to Bobby Jemison that we talked about on and that kind of hazy, you know, breezy summer style with a bit of a dark edge. But at the same time, if you want to go glass half full, it's there for you.
Yeah.
You know what?
Thought so. I could be wrong, but
much one thing that I took from this record is that, and it's not just if you want to go glass half full, you can make this a hopeful record. You can make this a deeply depressing record, or frankly, pretty much anything in between.
I never once felt down by this. Not
but
once.
There's a lot.
Not even the line "Good things come to those who wait forever."
Yeah, that's brilliant. Awful. Like, I mean, seriously, I thought that there were some deeply, like, emotionally distressing moments in this record. But again, probably if you wanted there to be, or if that's the mood you were in, it feels to me as though, like, and especially during the more kind of skeletal parts of this where, you know, he's gone with a kind of a less is more effort, so which is obviously going to happen on sort of more downbeat tracks and so on and so forth, it feels like there's a lot of space in which to insert, whether it's your own narrative or your own emotions or whatever.
And yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of kind of light and hope within this. I mean, you know, when he's talking about that Thatcher era and obviously the grimness of it, but he's also speaking about, well, that's when he properly got, like, you know, sick about music, I think it's the way he described it, like it came on him like a sickness. And he's, you know, he's like someone at maybe the midpoint of his career or life, and he's kind of assessing where he's at, but he's also using, which I think he's done as you were saying, Dave, just like the last kind of couple of records, like tapping into that nostalgia thing. And like the things he draws on are just, you know, so sublime. I mean, the song we heard at the top is obviously a nod to a Blue Nile song, so immediately I think this is a classic album. I mean, the bass line sound like, you know, vintage Peter Hook. It's the synth sound like Disintegration, which is just incredible. It totally just, yeah, I fell in love with it kind of straight away. And I think it reminded me of, we talked recently about LCD Sound System's comeback, and, you know, James Murphy's made his career doing that thing where he tries to synthesize like achingly hip, you know, acts from and sounds from the past, mainly New York. I mean, with this, Dan is clearly doing something similar, but with the other side of the Atlantic, and I think he does it much more successfully. So we don't need LCD Sound System, we have Destroyer.
Well said, sir.
Thank you.
Do you want to give us a number?
I'd give this a 9.
That's your first 9 all year? Yeah. Really?
No, it's not. Broken Social Scene as well.
Okay, that's a big second number. Well, yeah. Hang on. Top, before you get to your number, what's your summation of are you on board with Craig to that level?
Yeah. No, I think it's in terms of each individual song, it's like
It's like a Netflix series that each episode could be. It's like Black Mirror, you know? It's like every episode.
Fuck off.
Of,
Jesus.
Fuck right.
He's our
off.
Guest.
Every episode.
He knows I mean it with love.
The album can. Could be an, its own standalone thing. I don't think there is any particular connection between the songs, yet there is some there's some sort of just overarching. I don't even know if it's pessimism or optimism, malaise or joy, but he seems to be able to tap into something that he sees in the human condition and in things about, you know,
it's gone very Guardian-esque, hasn't it?
get me on there,
yeah.
And he talks a lot about different things that he finds disgusting about the world and different things that. And the way he describes these things can almost send a sort of a disgusting shiver down your spine. Like in the last song, Le Règle de Jeu, he said that he wanted to have a title in French because it was a song that portrayed this disgusting American party with a, as the lyric says, with a, something to do with a woman at the party with a pig of a man who was wasted. And he said he wanted to have a chorus line in French because it would be something that potentially American listeners wouldn't understand.
So all of that translates to what out of 10 for you?
I would say, in short, I would also give it a 9.
Yes. Cole Morrigan.
I go 7.5. Okay. I enjoyed the album, but...
I'm going 7. I didn't enjoy it anywhere near as much as the two gentlemen to my left, but I probably wasn't going to because I do find his voice a bit of a stumbling block, but I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I think it is a very good record. I think it's definitely one of the recommends. Definitely want to check it if you have never even heard them before. Dive in and give it a go. So thumbs up all around. Well done, Destroyer.
What else do we have to listen to this week?
Well, my friend, I have been getting stuck in wrist deep with the new...
Jesus Christ. Are you sodomizing Jamie Cullum with a piano?
With the new Converge record.
Oh, God.
It's my boys Converge.
I would honestly rather somebody got stuck into me wrist deep than listen to the new Converge record.
Well,
but anyway.
What do you have?
We're going to have to issue an apology next week.
Issue it now.
All right. I would like to apologize and distance myself from my co-hosts. And also they apologize.
I apologize too.
Sorry, guys.
I was thinking more of like farm work. Like, you know, like digging ditches and
stuff. Inseminating a cow.
No,
stop, Cole.
I actually didn't mean that to be a disgusting euphemism. I really didn't. I'm just misunderstood.
You never do, dude.
Also misunderstood.
Classic single entendre.
Also
there.
Misunderstood are Converge, Boston, Massachusetts. I think that's where they're from. I hope it is because I'm a big fan. Hardcore band who've been on the go since the early 90s. I hope that we have an album next week, Cullum, because if we don't, we're doing the Converge album.
I will go home and record an album
This is what's annoying because I went to Destroyer with, you know, some hesitancy and I gave it its all. Converge are a hardcore band, as I said before. They're not for everyone, but they're phenomenal. They're genuinely brilliant. I think they're the most consistent band out there. This is their 9th record. It's called The Dusk in Us, and I'm a huge fan of it. Probably was always going to be because it's Converge, but they genuinely are phenomenal. It's a great record. The title track has absolutely blown me away. I think it's one of the best tracks they've ever put out. It has that amazing evocative emotion that they're able to harness through this incredible aggression. Jacob Bannon, for me, is maybe my favorite lyricist. He manages to do incredible, you know, kind of descriptive narratives along with incredibly straightforward and almost laughable on paper style, you know, emotional lyrics. But he carries it off through his delivery, which is second to none. I'm a huge Converge fan. It's one of the albums of the year. I fucking love it. And there you go. Oh, sorry. I was listening to a track that the Brian Eno and Kevin Shields. You've heard this, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. It's called Only Once Away, My Son. It's a 9-minute sort of sweeping
tone
soundscape thing. I mean it's very difficult to describe, frankly. The only reason we didn't play it is because playing it 30 seconds of it would make no sense whatsoever. But it's something to give a go because
get
it's
your best
pretty
headphones.
Epic, isn't it?
If this had been on the Blade Runner 2049 soundtrack, that film or score rather, that film would have been instantly better. This is what I wanted from that score, and the score is fine, but this took me away to a different place. It reminded me of that Justin Bieber song when it was slowed down 800 times and it becomes the most euphoric thing ever. The TV show Hannibal, Brian Retzel did a similar thing in the season 2 finale with the Aria of the Goldberg variations, and it's phenomenal. This is up there with all that kind of stuff. Just like I said, get your best pair of headphones, put 10 minutes aside, and this will sweep you away. It's unbelievable, isn't it, Dave?
It's amazing. Yeah, it's I would even go so far as to saying forget the headphones and play it pump it into a room on your speakers. Yes, play it on your phone.
On a bus.
Yeah, actually, maybe to lads down the back of the bus listening to the Eno Shields collaboration. Definitely would make the journey into town a lot better. But no, I thought it was beautiful. Terrifying at times. Captivating and sensuous at other times. But
like this episode.
Like this episode.
Indeed. Craigie?
I gave King Krill's new one a spin. The Ooze, it kind of sounds like Sublime, but I don't know if the songs are there.
Friend of the show, Zara Hedeman, said it sounds like a Sunday evening in which everything else melts away.
Yeah, I mean, the production's great, but I don't know if the songs are there.
But friend of the show, Zara Hedeman, sounds like a Sunday evening in which everything else
I'll
melts
give
away.
It another spin, because I respect her.
Fair enough. Okay, where can we find you online, David Tapley?
TandemFelix.ie, yes, that's right.
Oh, really?
I went and bought it. Finally. The other person who had it before me. It expired, so it's ours now.
Dave, you know where to find me online, obviously.
At Felix Tandem on Twitter.
Yeah. You will find us in Galway next weekend and find our next episode out next Monday.
We hope so. More than likely.
Let's be optimistic here.
Well, we turn around the live show in one fucking 12-hour stint.
True.
We're good for that kind of stuff. Gentlemen, thank you very much, David Tapley in particular, for coming in. Hello. Woo!
Thank you, guys.
And yes, to close this out, as always, new Irish music. Very excited about this one. New signee to the Feel Good Lost faction?
Clan? Faction.
Clan?
Yeah, sure.
Family?
Yeah.
Cult.
Militia? The Feel Good Lost record label and multimedia project, I suppose. Lilla Vargan, she played at Hard Working Class Heroes this year, one of the stars, I believe. I unfortunately didn't get to see her set because Bad Bones was too busy stealing the festival, but I heard Lilla came close. She is a singer-songwriter, and her EP is out now, I believe. After you've heard this great episode of the podcast that I know you've loved, go and check out the EP. It's really fucking good. I had listened to it properly for the first time a couple of days ago, and it's great. The lead single is called Downtown, and that's what's going to play us out. My name is Dave Hanratty. This has been No Encore. There will be No Encore. Come to our quiz on Thursday, the 7th of December in the Workman's Club. This is Lilla Vargan and Downtown.
See you soon, Galway.
See you soon, Galway.
Nothing you say will ever be wrong, 'cause it just feels good being in your arms. And I'm running with you as fast as I can, singing to myself, I wanna hold your hand. And we're going downtown, 'cause we feel like running
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Been thinking about McDonald's all day. Can't get it off my mind. I can already taste it. Ooh, got my mind on my mouth and my mouth ready for some Mickey D's deal.
There's a deal for every moment at McDonald's.
Right now, get two of your favorites for just $3.50. Mix and match a classic McChicken, a hot and spicy McChicken, or a juicy McDouble. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.